Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to season 13 of the Parenting Aces podcast, a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and this week I have a former top junior player, former top collegiate player, a recent grad, and now the current assistant coach at his college alma mater, Jake Beasley, joining the podcast. Jake's family are longtime Parenting Aces subscribers and supporters, and I'm thrilled to have Jake with us to chat about his junior career, his college career, and what's next for him. Before I bring him on, a couple quick reminders. First of all, if you are not following us on all our social media, we would love to have you. Parenting Aces is on Facebook. It's on X, aka Twitter. It's on Instagram. It's on YouTube. It's on LinkedIn. And our call sign is just the @ Parenting Aces. So please come follow along. We post a lot of good content, especially when I'm out at tournaments, posting videos and interviews and things. So don't want you to miss any of that. Also, if you haven't become a premium member and are interested in doing that, we'd love to have you there as well. Just go to our website and click on the join link and you'll see all your various options. Also, a quick plug for our upcoming conference on June 9th. It is a virtual conference that will be held on Zoom and recorded and available for purchase for the recordings, but also for live attendance. And I am putting this conference on in conjunction with Danielle McNamara, who is the former women's tennis coach at Yale University. Danielle, many of you know her from this podcast, or you know her from articles on our website, but she is a phenomenal resource, and the two of us have put together what we think is going to be an outstanding day of education for all of the tennis families out there. So please keep your eyes and ears open for registration. But in the meantime, mark your calendar, June 9th. It's going to be on Zoom. It is going to be recorded if you can't attend live, and we would love to see you there. Now, without further ado, I bring you Jake Beasley.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jake, it's so great to have you here. I'm super excited for you to share your tennis journey with the Parenting Aces community and tell us all about what's been going on in your life. But first, I want to jump in by saying you have kind of lived the entire journey that anybody would dream up for their kid. And I'm so impressed by you and impressed by your accomplishments and your dedication.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Yeah. So let's start by having you kind of tell us how you got started playing tennis.
Okay. So my dad played tennis in Atlanta, Atlanta being a great tennis community, played Alta. There's a good memory of mine where I was probably 8 or 9, probably a little younger than that. We went to one of his Alta matches, and I loved powdered sugar donuts. And I went and hid in the bushes so that my mom didn't find me eating a whole bag of like the Intamins, like 15 or 16 of them. And so that was kind of, my dad just played tennis. I was around it a lot. And then
eating powdered sugar donuts.
Yep. Yeah. That was kind of my intro to tennis, I guess. But he was a good doubles player around Atlanta, pretty well known. We used to go out with me and my sister in Polo Fields Country Club and just kind of hit around, play around with him. And we moved across the street into a neighborhood called Vickery, which had a really nice tennis center. And then a guy named Jim Harp came in and he started a little academy there. And so I did the summer camp there and then kind of got involved a couple times a week with him. And he was an excellent, very, very good coach, technically sound and building some juniors up towards college. And I was able to kind of work my way into that, playing against a lot of high schoolers and a lot of people older than me and using that as kind of a stepping stone to build myself up to competing at a higher level. So that's how I kind of got started in Atlanta.
And how old were you when you started training with Jim?
I think I was around 8 or 9 when I first started. I still played baseball until I was 13. Mm-hmm. So I was a multi-sport athlete. And then 12 or 13-ish is when I was like, all right, I'm doing tennis. I was actually better at baseball at the time, but I liked tennis more. I liked the individual aspect of it. So I decided, you know, let's see how this goes. And it worked out pretty well. So I'm glad I did.
Did you stick around the Atlanta area for competition? Did you travel around the U.S.? Did you travel outside the U.S.? Tell us a little bit about your junior competition life.
So I stayed around Georgia for the most part until maybe 14s is when I played my first sectional. So I was pretty much just state tournaments, maybe played Southerns once. Played my first sectional at 14, which I think it was then still called a bullfrog. Now they're they were the Icy Hots. I don't know what they are now. Played that at 14, got rounded for the first time at my first big tournament, but I got the experience and then gradually started going, you know, a couple nationals, made only doubles of clay courts when I was 16. And then I ended up going down to Florida, training there for a couple of years for my sophomore and junior year of high school. And then I kind of started traveling internationally, playing a few ITFs, got around some more international people down at the Academy Sanchez Casal, where I was training and living at the time. And that introduced me to all of these incredible people traveling around, going to, you know, one tournament in Italy and one tournament in Guadeloupe and a couple in Mexico, and not entirely going ITF, still having a foot in the door with USTA a little bit. And then I ended my senior year back in Atlanta, just want to be back at home for that last year, and played Kalamazoo for the first time my senior year. And that's where I was kind of had a good clays, and I had a few coaches start to kind of notice me late because I was a late bloomer. So mm-hmm. It was a mix of everything a little bit.
So what made you decide to make the move down to Florida, to leave home, leave your parents, essentially, and leave everything that you knew and was comfortable to go train at a full service academy?
So I was a full-time serve and volleyer, and that was unique because I really couldn't make more than 3 or 4 ground strokes in a row at one point. Probably why I wasn't, you know, the highest level junior in the South at the time. But going down to Florida, my dad had talked to another guy's parent that I had played some doubles with about an academy, Sanchez Casal, and how clay court tennis and the Spanish training system, and Emilio Sanchez is actually down there training with the kids and everything, and how beneficial that was to him developing some backcourt skills and understanding like how important movement is in backcourt game rather than just like pure serve and volley coming forward. And we're like, oh, well, that sounds perfect for a guy like me who I can finish. I have developed these skills decently, but if I'm not at the net, I'm not going to win. So the decision was kind of, all right, let's go down there, train for a couple years and just develop these skills that I haven't had. And once we develop those a little bit, then it'll be more of an all court game, and that'll be able to translate a little bit better. Plus getting on clay, I think was a good developmental piece. That there's some different skills, some more strength, a little bit better fitness aspect. That was important for me to develop if I wanted to do anything at the higher levels as well.
Gotcha. So when you made that decision to go down to Florida, did you go by yourself or did one of your parents move down with you?
My mom was down there most of the time with me. I would say she was there probably 60-something% of the time. Her mom still lived in Atlanta, so she had to be kind of in and out. So I would be there for 3 weeks alone, and then I would be there for a month with my mom, and then she'd head out for a couple more weeks. So it was a little bit of a mixed bag, but most of the time I had somebody down there with me.
Mm-hmm. And from a social standpoint, how did you kind of manage your friends back home, socializing at the academy? And then when you made that decision to come back to Atlanta for your senior year, kind of reacclimating into your high school peer group?
So it's kind of a joke. I went to 3 different high schools in 4 years.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I started my ninth grade year. I went to a school called Kingsridge, which is a pretty small school, where there was a tennis team, but it really wasn't anything competitive or anything like that. And the deal was that was kind of like an academic college prep school. And my parents told me, okay, if you can balance academics with training, then this is basically your opportunity to earn going down to Florida. So I did that for a year. Did well. Grades were good. They had a really, really good strength coach there who was a CrossFit guy, who I went to work out with at 5 a.m. before school. And then I'd go straight to practice immediately after school. So I did that for a year, went down to Florida for a year, and then I came back and went to another very small part-time school called Rivers Academy, mm-hmm. which is kind of a school for people that have schedule constraints. So there's like equestrians there, there's tennis players, there's actors, models, like that kind of people that have to travel. And so I never had like a tight-knit friend group coming back. Mm-hmm. So I went to Rivers Academy in middle school as well. But I didn't really know people anymore because I hadn't been there for so long. So I really didn't have a tight friend group when I came back. I kind of had to go into the new program I was going into, which was at Old Town. And I knew some of the players like Tyler Stice or the McKinney brothers and a few other people that I just knew from playing in juniors. Mm-hmm. And those kind of became my friends. And I still had some of the relationships back for people in Florida that I'd been with for a couple of years. But coming back to Georgia, I really was a little bit on my own and developing relationships just kind of newly for that year.
Got it. Got it. And I mean, for you, obviously it worked well and it, you know, you were able to continue to grow as a tennis player, grow as a young adult. And then all of a sudden it's time to start thinking about college and what you want to do. And are you going to play tennis and where are you going to play and yada, yada. And like you said, you had a really strong summer. Your summer before your senior year, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah. To what do you attribute that growth in your competitive muscle, your tennis strength, your mental strength, all of that?
So the summer before my senior year, I remember I played so many tournaments. I played like tournament after tournament.
And you were living in Florida that year, mm-hmm. correct?
I was living. Okay. I was still in Florida at that time, about to transition back to Georgia, mm-hmm. but I was still in Florida for the most part. I think over that summer, and training on clay. I was prepping for clays because I knew that was a big one. And then I wasn't necessarily going to get into Kalamazoo. I ended up making it in, but I was training for clays because that was the one I knew I could get into. So I was training on clay in Florida. And played a prep tournament or two and just made sure that I was like, I was 100% ready to go and ended up having a really, really good clays. I think I made quarters of the back draw or something, but I had played a bunch of guys that were top level D1 commits and was successful. And that's where I had already had some contact with coaches, but they hadn't really seen me play because I wasn't playing a lot of the big tournaments that they were at. So that's kind of where I developed some of the relationships with coaches. They got to see me actually play. They got to meet me. I ended up getting the sportsmanship award at that tournament, which probably that's always a good little boost to a coach.
And to your mom and dad.
Yes, definitely. That was definitely one of the things I was most proud of in juniors was that actual tournament and that award. But developing those relationships in the summer so that then coming into that fall, I would be able to go on these recruiting trips and then I could actually like get my foot in the door. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the prep was like, let's go play so many tournaments and get just match tough, match ready, so that once big tournament comes around, the reps are in and I've got enough matches under my belt to the point where I feel comfortable and confident going in.
Gotcha. So it's fall of senior year. You are up in the air about where you're going to go. Can you tell us where you were looking?
So I did take all five visits. I took my visits to South Carolina, TCU, Florida State, Alabama, and Vanderbilt. And like I said, first time going to Kalamazoo. So I'm seeing these coaches and meeting some of them. And I remember I was in the hotel with my mom. We just come in. I talked to Coach Roditi from TCU. Love him, love their program. And had a great conversation with him, just like setting up visit and trying to get that planned. And then immediately after that, I get a text from Josh Goffey, who's the coach here at South Carolina. And he's like, hey, I'm in the hotel. Do you want to come meet for a minute? And I was like, absolutely. So we go up the escalator and have a great conversation with him. He and I think kind of similar, very analytical, he's into a little bit of the science of the sport, which is what I am very passionate about and what I study. And so really enjoyed that conversation with him. And then my mom, I think she called my dad after that conversation with Josh and was like, I think Jake just talked to the coach he's going to play for. Pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Hadn't gone on any visits at this point, or it's late August. And I then set up like five straight weekends of visits starting in September. And just one by one went to all of those schools, and I fell in love with South Carolina. So that it was just kind of honing in. And then my biggest thing was I want a coach that's going to like that I respond to well, because I think that's going to be the guy that's kind of, or the person that's guiding me as I'm developing. And for the next, at the time it was going to be 4 years, ended up being a lot longer than that. But the person that's going to be guiding me and mentoring me for the next 4 years. So I thought that was kind of my number one. Number two was definitely the team. So then coming on the visits, I had to get a good feel for who is this guy recruiting? Why is this team doing well? Do I actually like the guys? Do they mesh well? There were some schools that I knew that they were recruiting guys that I didn't mesh well with. So I was not even considering them. Mm-hmm. That was just a part of it. And then the last one was, you know, does the academics, do they suit me? I studied exercise science here. They have the number one PhD for exercise science program in the country here for public schools, I think. And so it just ended up being a great fit. Love Josh, love the team, the school fit. It was just a great, great situation overall.
I love that. So you graduate high school. At what point did you sign your NLI? Was it fall signing day or did you wait till spring? Do you remember?
I believe it was fall, if I remember correctly.
Okay. So you're committed. So second semester, senior year of high school, you're like, pressure's off. I can just live life, enjoy this last year at home, work on my tennis, and head off to college next year, which is a great feeling. I remember it, absolutely. Know, from my family's experience. And so then you get on campus at South Carolina and you started, was it 2018? Was your freshman year? Is that right?
Fall 2018.
So you had a normal freshman year.
Yep.
And then middle of your sophomore year, oops, we have a pandemic and everything's shutting down. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about how the school responded to COVID, more specifically how the tennis program responded to COVID, and how you guys managed to continue to train and study and do all the things that college students are supposed to do while at the same time basically being cut off from normal college life?
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. So the day that the shutdown actually happened, Tennessee was warming up on our courts, like warming up for our match for that day. And Josh got a call, hey, we're shutting everything down. We saw them get on the bus and leave. So the wow. day of our match against Tennessee, that's what was going on. And then we waited about the next
Tennessee, by the way, being a really big rival.
Oh yeah. 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 It's a team that we've gone back and forth with ever since I've been here. They've been a top 10 school the entire time and they're excellent program, but so we were ready. It was Georgia Tennessee weekend, which is a huge weekend for us. Definitely teams that we want to beat really bad. They want to beat us really bad. So we were ready and then get this call. They leave 2 or 3 days later. Josh is like, season's over. We're like, okay, we need to go home. Let's pack up our dorm and we're supposed to go home now. So everything got chopped really fast. And it was just kind of a, well, we don't really know what's going on. So I go home, all of our international guys go home before all of the flights and stuff start shutting down. And we're just kind of in a limbo situation of, okay, well, what's next? I actually was scheduled to get surgery at the end of season because I had a hip tear of my labrum. And so I ended up getting that surgery in May. And it actually worked out for me a little bit because I had a little extra time to recover and get back on my feet.
Right.
So that happened. I basically spent the summer. I did a online internship because I couldn't move. So I did an internship with Emory and wasn't able to train. Everybody else was training. Came back in the fall and we don't have a dining hall we can go into. We have to be very careful about how we're training. Like in the gyms and stuff, everything out here at the course was pretty standard-ish, other than we have to get tested so often and we have to make sure that if anybody gets a sniffle, they stay home. Because mm-hmm. if one person gets COVID, the whole team is out of practice for 2 weeks, which happened a couple times.
Wow.
And so there were no fall tournaments. What we ended up doing was scheduling hidden duels against multiple other teams a couple times throughout that fall instead of playing tournaments. And then once season gets going, we're very cautious about travel. We can't take flights because that's like super risky. So we're going everywhere by either a van or a bus and trying as hard as we can to make everything normal. The one thing that really was beneficial for tennis was we couldn't go to class. So we spent all of our time at the tennis courts. We would do like class at the courts. We would be sitting in here, like in our team room, all doing class just with our headphones in and just, you know, this is where we were for 8 hours a day because it was either here or it was at our dorm. And we just chose to be here. And it actually ended up being really beneficial for our team as far as tennis, but we also got a lot closer because we couldn't hang out with other people. We couldn't go and hang out with another team or go and hang out with other friends because that was just so risky to our season and to our team. So yeah, it had downsides, but it also made our team, I think, a little bit better as far as the amount of time we spent together and the amount of time that we just spent at the courts.
Yeah, I love that. Were there ever any conflicts, you know, with all that togetherness? Because you get a bunch of mostly teenage guys together, hormones are raging, stresses are high because especially for the kids that don't live driving distance, seeing their families, I'm sure was very challenging during that time. So any blowups that you recall or were things managed pretty calmly?
Well, so the thing about our, this team, at least, I can't speak for other teams, but our team, we already lived together. Like we all lived within a 30-foot door to door within an apartment complex. So we were pretty used to that already. And we ate every meal together. We trained together. So it wasn't a massive change. It was definitely a little bit of a change. I remember toward the end of that year, so the round of 16, normally only the quarterfinals and on is hosted at the final site for NCAAs. That year, the round of 16 on was hosted altogether to eliminate some travel and risk for getting sick. So I remember we were sitting on the courts in Orlando and at the end of season, long season, a lot of travel together, a lot of being just in a bus together. There was a little snippiness going on at practice one of the days, and Josh had to get on us, be like, "Hey guys, like we're at the end of the season. We got to build each other up. We're dragging each other down and getting a little too competitive right now." And so maybe a little bit, but the other side of that is we were super competitive with each other, and that competitiveness can also drive you to get better. So sure. There's an element of maybe we got a little bit, but at the same time, it also might have been good. That was the first year we'd ever made round of 16. So I don't know. It was a lot of togetherness, but it has ups and downs for sure.
Love it. Love that. You had an incredible career as a player at South Carolina. You were All-American 5 times, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just looking at your credentials. Let's see. Scholar athlete, sorry, 5-time ITA scholar athlete, 5-time SEC academic honor roll. CSC, I'm not sure what that stands for, but academic all district. And you had 5 years as a player on the team, obviously. How difficult was it to keep your academics at that high level while also keeping your tennis at such a high level? Because South Carolina is, you know, it's not an easy school academically. It's not an easy school to excel at in terms of the tennis, because Josh Goffey, the head coach, does a great job recruiting really high level players to his team.
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge at times, especially, you know, going on the road, and we'd be gone from Wednesday to Monday, depending on where we were going and how long we were going to be playing for. And so missing class and missing an exam here and missing the instruction on how to write a paper here, or things like that. So it definitely is a challenge at times. To anybody who's about to go through this, getting ahead, you have to make sure that you're getting ahead. And talking to your teachers. So I'm now a master's student still. I'm about to finish my master's here. And more than ever now, I actually, whenever I walk into our public health building, I recognize teachers and I say hi to people. And every time I walk in, I'm able to say, "Hey, how are you? What's going on? What research are you doing now?" Make conversation with people. And that's because I was able to, I sat in the front of classes. I talked to my professors. I had to, because I was going to miss class. But those relationships now are paying off. And it's really important, because I'm able to help contribute to any research and things that they're doing. But they also are able to, while I'm in their classes, they help me out. And they're like, hey, this is what's going on. If you need to email me, just let me know. We also have awesome academics people who work with student athletes who make sure that we are taking the classes that are most suitable to our schedule, and mm-hmm. and taking professors that are going to be more agreeable, because they all have that knowledge and they have the experience of sending hundreds of student athletes through this. Yeah. So working with those people, putting it on myself to also curate a schedule that I think I'm going to be able to manage in the fall when we're less busy versus in the spring, all that kind of stuff makes a big difference, especially going through season, and especially on a team that we were trying to compete for national championships. So making sure that I could be available as much as possible to the team when they needed it, and then also taking care of everything I needed to take care of for my studies.
Mm-hmm. And so your major was exercise science or exercise phys? Exercise science.
Exercise science, yeah.
Okay. And you're getting your master's also in exercise science? Is there a specific focus? I don't know how that works at the master's level.
So you can have a specific focus. I don't. So I got to pursue a master's for tennis, which – so I was presented an opportunity to come back for a fifth year. It's like, okay, great. I'll get a master's. Kind of not really understanding what all that entails. And so got through last year without a problem. And then I, at the end of last year, was reaching out to some professors and some lab personnel to say, hey, I want to do research next year. I'm not going to be on the team anymore, so I actually have time for it. Little do I know, like, you're really supposed to do that kind of starting senior year of undergrad and then transition into that for sure first year of grad school. And then you're one of the leaders once you're a second year grad student. Like, that's, it goes like PhDs, well, head of the lab, postdoc, PhD, and then master's. And the second year master's students are supposed to be like teaching people that are below them and helping to instruct and make sure that everything is run smoothly. I didn't have that opportunity. So I came in to my second year behind the curve. There's a running joke with people that I work with now who that they say, oh, Jake didn't read at all the master student handbook, so he doesn't know what's going on, which is true. I didn't read it until this year. but I, so it, it provided an opportunity, which was awesome. It, I was a little behind the curve because I didn't really understand what I was getting myself into. Now it's all worked out. I'm you know, trying to finish the master's, hopefully. Teaching, I'm a TA, and I get to work with the team. So it's been an awesome opportunity for me to do a lot of different things this year.
And I mean, I didn't even mention the fact that you're an assistant coach for the tennis team, working with your coach, working with some of the guys that were your teammates just a year and a half ago. So what's that experience been like?
It's interesting for sure to be on the other side of that curtain is very interesting to see everything that goes on behind the scenes. Because of the fact that I am still in school and I do have other responsibilities academically, I'm not around as much as I want to be. But you know, helping out with going on the road and being there with the guys, it's hard to go from, you know, you have all of it into you have none of that. And so it's been a great thing for me to be able to be here still. And yeah, working with Josh is incredible because I get a little bit of insight into how he's actually running things and progressing guys, because he's been excellent developmental coach with Paul Jobe, with Toby Samuel, with Connor Thompson, and getting guys that were great players, but definitely not at the top of college to, these are like the guys that everybody's looking at and aspiring to be as an incoming freshman or as a high schooler. It's like, oh, these are like some of the best players in the country. And getting to see how he's actually running that and all of the planning that goes into that of each specific guy is really incredible. And it's a lot, I'm learning a ton. And it's really, really wonderful experience for me to get.
I love that. So exercise science, master's, what does one do with that degree?
So oftentimes an exercise physiologist that works in a clinical setting, so working in a hospital with patients that have just undergone any type of procedure, whether that's like sickness, like a cancer, or they just are rehabilitating, like you could do PT, do research. One of my my mentor academically, his name is Sean Arendt. One of his big things is supplements and ergogenic aids. I took one of his classes, which was really interesting, where they study like creatine or caffeine or things like that and how that's beneficial to athletics. So doing a lot of research is kind of the general way. If I were to really go that route, a PhD would probably be required to really kind of excel there. But you know, PT, exercise physiologist, trainer of some sort, like strength coach, would be that route as well.
And being a tennis coach, is that something that interests you, being a college tennis coach, or are you looking more at, you know, a one-on-one working with patients or being in a lab potentially? I mean, it sounds like you have lots of options available to you. And
right now, my thought is definitely going into college tennis. That's, I'm passionate about it. I really enjoy all the time I get to spend with the guys now, and learning from Josh and our new assistant, Johnny Parks, is excellent. He actually comes from a very similar field as me, so it's really cool to get to work with him.
He's an awesome guy. Yeah. I love both awesome. Of them.
So yeah. I'm intending to go into college coaching with the new third paid coach position. That's just kind of new in college tennis. Provides an opportunity for me to, again, get a foot in the door and then progress from there. For now, I think finish this, let's get established somewhere and then progress that way. But I definitely am intending to stay in college coaching, assuming that I get an opportunity somewhere. So,
and so as an exercise physiologist or exercise scientist, what do you feel that brings to a person who is now a coach?
So this is actually a topic that Johnny and I have talked about a good amount, where there is the science portion of, well, this should be this way and this should be this way, and these are the things that need to happen to create a certain outcome with an athlete. And while those things may be true, there's also an art to coaching where you have to just understand the athlete and what they're going through and how this pertains to that individual. So as a coach, but and as somebody who has a background in the science part of athletics or the body or anything like that, you have to make sure that you aren't just setting things based on science, and you are also, you know, they're a person. You have to take that into account as well. And so there might be knowledge that is important and can pertain to an athlete, but it isn't necessarily going to apply the same way to each individual person. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of understand that relationship a little bit. Yes, there's knowledge, but there's also the person that you're working with. So it's you have to use those two in unison.
And just a side note, Johnny Parks came from USTA player development. He was a USTA coach for years and has worked with junior players, now working with college players. And I mean, you've got two of the best mentors in the game. I know you realize how fortunate you are to be in that setting, but can you talk about how your relationship with both of those guys, both Josh and Johnny, are helping shape who and what type of coach you want to become?
Yeah, and that's a very important part of it, is developing that coaching personality or coaching philosophy. And mm-hmm. So, you know, with Josh, he's been here for 14 to 15th year, been in college coaching for almost 20. And so he's seen the college player with school, with dealing with all of the things that come with college, the social scene, all of that kind of stuff. So he has a really good understanding of, okay, there's the tennis portion and then there's the outside of tennis portion, which you have to manage those. And that's an important part of, if you want to go into college coaching, you have to be able to realize that. And so from a developmental standpoint, he's incredible and knows exactly what he's doing and ton of knowledge to be gained there. Johnny comes at it from, well, this a very professional standpoint, and this is how we're developing professionals from juniors. And so he brings a very unique part of that with the strength and conditioning and working with guys that are going pro and working with juniors that are top in the world, which Josh is also doing, just in a different setting. So they see things similarly, but from a different point of view, which is really, really interesting. And I think that it's a great compliment, because you see, like, guy that knows college. He knows professional, like professional too, but he knows college really well. And then the guy that's like, well, we're developing these guys as professionals, right? So you get that mix, and it's a great combination to kind of, I get to see, oh, this is how we develop people professionally, and this is how we develop young men that are coming up through college. And that's an excellent way for me to see things from a different point of view, depending on where I end up going.
I love that. I love that. I want to switch gears for a second. You talked about the fact that when you were still on the team as a player, that there were some international players on the team. And we know, you know, at a lot of schools, they have a good percentage of players coming from all over the world, which is super cool. There's still this kind of mindset among a lot of parents of junior players that, hey, you know, these spots should be open to American kids. These scholarships should be available to American kids. We need to limit the number of international players. I used to be in that group saying those things until my son went to college and had the experience of living with and playing with kids from all over the world. And the knowledge and the life experience that he gained from that is invaluable and serves him to this day. How would you kind of answer, now that you're in the coaching side too, how would you answer a family that's maybe considering coming to South Carolina, but feels like, you know, as an American, we just don't get a fair shake. There just aren't enough slots for our kids.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the coaches are especially at the level of a Power Five conference, they are looking to develop the absolute best team that they can. And they are willing to go around the world looking for those players. And so there is the aspect of, well, it's hard. Sometimes it can be hard as an American to go outside of the country and compete against those players. So then you get that mirror to actually see, like, okay, when we match up tennis wise, how does it look? And so I was fortunate to get that experience. And actually, when I went out of the country, the first time I ever played an ITF outside of the US, there was actually a very big difference between the type of training that I saw young kids doing and the type of training that I had experienced in the US. And so it was a very eye-opening experience to be like, oh, wow, this is really incredible. They're training eight-year-olds like they're professionals. And so kids that are getting that training from such a young age, they develop very well and they become very high-level tennis players. That being said, the US has also produced some very incredible tennis players. So, yeah. But these coaches are looking at ITF rankings and UTR and all those things, and they are competing against each other to develop the best team. So whether or not the person is from the US or not, it isn't like the biggest component. It can play a role, but what they're looking for are quality people and quality players and people that they think fit into their system. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they're from the US or not, it's not the biggest factor.
And from your experience as a player, what are things that you learned and gained from being part of a team of guys from all over the place?
Mm-hmm. I had teammates from Portugal, France, England, Scotland, Wales, Australia, Brazil. Maybe I'm forgetting one or two, but all over the place. So five different continents. And so getting to see the difference, and there's the tennis aspect where Australians play a certain way in general. British guys play a certain way in general, and Americans play a certain way in general. It's really interesting to see that contrast. But then socially, it's also very different. And getting to hear about the experiences of, oh, well, all of the British guys, they all traveled together when they were 12, and they've known each other since they were so young because it's a small country, and that's how they do things. Versus somebody who come from California that I've never even heard of, and I don't know them at all. And so it's very interesting contrast of like, oh, they grow up together. They know each other. Everybody knows each other versus in the US, it's so big that we can't know everybody. So yeah, it's an interesting contrast about the guys that come in internationally, especially if they have like a language barrier or something. That's just another thing to navigate for them. And it's interesting to see how different people from different places navigate those things.
And I mean, do you feel like it's given you a more open worldview in terms of now in your dealings? I don't know. Are you involved in recruiting at all in your position?
Minorly, as of now, not a ton. I'm sort of learning the ropes a little bit. More of a learning part right now than me actually going and talking to people.
But so, you know, when these recruits come onto campus now and they're not from the U.S., has your experience as a player being surrounded by guys from all over the place helped you help these players coming in now to adapt easier and to navigate the process a little more smoothly?
Definitely. There's definitely a learning component if you're not from anywhere, even if you just aren't from South Carolina. Coming to a new place is always going to be a bit of a change and a bit of a learning curve. And so bringing in these people that are just from hundreds and thousands of miles away is crazy and life-changing for them. And I've had the pleasure of having some of my teammates come home with me for Thanksgiving and come be, you know, freshman year, people coming to my house just because they couldn't go home for 3 days and things like that. So there's definitely where I feel like making people welcome is definitely something I had to learn. And as kind of one of the close guys who's kind of from the area, making sure that everybody is taken care of and being sort of like that, a little bit of a leader as far as making sure that the welcome is there and making sure that there is that aspect of like, let's make sure that you're comfortable and in a setup that you can enjoy, like whether that's taking a guy to Target so he can get bedding, things like that, that people don't really think about. Like they have to buy everything here, and then making sure that it's stored properly for the summer so they can come back and not have to do that all over again. And I have a car, we have to drive people everywhere. So there's definitely an aspect of that where freshman year come in, you don't really know, but then you get better at it as you go through the years with international guys.
And do you feel like that's a skill that is going to set you apart as you move up through the coaching ranks? Because not everybody gets that experience as an 18-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I had a little bit of that experience at San Jose Casal, being down there with lots of international people. So I think that set me up pretty well to do it well in college. And yeah, I think that it's an important piece to be able to understand where people are at and how they might be feeling, and getting it just an overall sense of the people around you is important. Especially, you know, Danny and Raph came in, they didn't really know English yet. So making sure that they were situated and being able to translate for them. I speak mediocre Spanish, so I could talk to Danny a little bit, things like that. So yeah, making sure that people are taken care of, especially when they're not in their environment.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. All right. One last question and then we'll wrap this up. But a question that I hear all the time is about UTR and college recruiting. From where you're sitting now as an assistant coach and a recently graduated player, how important is UTR when you're looking to play college tennis?
It plays a role, definitely as a first impression basis. So it's hard to get a player in front of a coach, just kind of in general with, you know, there's coaches in North Carolina, South Carolina, California. So getting all the coaches together to watch a player doesn't happen very often. So that can definitely, it's an avenue to get your name on the board. But it also isn't an end all be all. There are skills and things that you get from actually watching a player play that can be way more important than a number on a website. So especially when you're coming up through the younger ages, it doesn't matter very much. It really, like 10s, 12s, 14s, even into the 16s. It's not the more important things are developing the skills that are going to be required to progress later. Those things have to be developed young, because once you reach 18, a college coach doesn't want to have to develop winning instincts and skills that needed to be developed, coordination skills and technique. They want to develop players that are, you know, this is how the pros do things. So there's a certain baseline that you have to have to develop that way. Getting your foot in the door with UTR, definitely a useful thing, definitely isn't the end all be all.
And are you seeing World Tennis Number, WTN, being used much in recruiting?
It's not something I've seen much of. I know that it has been used for some of the like fall tournaments. They did seedings and entrance based on WTN. So it's not something I personally know very much about. I would assume that it's a very similar concept, and I would say pretty much the same thing about any sort of rating system, where it's like when you're going through recruiting, it's not the number one thing to focus on, especially at younger ages. So develop the skills, the skill progression and the ability to handle pressure and handle situations. And those are all going to be more important than the numbers on these websites.
If you could give one piece of advice to 12-year-old Jake Beasley regarding tennis, what would it be?
I think it would be to invest time outside of the court to tennis. And what I mean by that is going through the visualizations and going through the off-court practice where you're not actually hitting balls, but you're thinking about, well, what happens in this situation? Getting the fitness component fully developed and making sure that that's not something that ever has to be worried about again. Part of the exercise science was because I wanted to learn about how to actually take care of my body and do the things that needed to be done. And so all of that has developed into a growing amount of knowledge, definitely not done learning, but understanding how that actually needs to be done to create a player that is capable of going up levels.
Love that. Love that. Jake, such a pleasure to chat with you. Can't wait to see what's next for you. And I was so excited when I saw your dad's announcement on Facebook that you were joining the coaching at South Carolina. I think that's such a cool next step for somebody who has really devoted the majority of his life to the sport, and to learn the coaching piece of it is so cool. And they're lucky to have you, and wish you all the success.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I enjoyed this a lot and very fortunate to be where I am, you know, very, very fortunate.
Love that. To my audience, thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast, for tennis parents by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.